Access to high-speed internet may seem like a pipe dream for some, but there's actually an organization trying to make that a reality for everyone living in the Commonwealth, even the most remote and rural areas.
On a good day, you can watch a three-minute video if you let it buffer for maybe 10 minutes. And if the wind's blowing, the satellite isn't working.
Despite numerous challenges, there is an organization working to bring broadband internet service to all of Kentucky. On this week's Eastern Standard, Kentucky Wired. We're interested in your questions, your comments, your personal stories. Please write to us, WEKU Eastern Standard at gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter and send a tweet at WEKUEST. Post on the Facebook page or the website, or give us a call. In just a few minutes, we will open the phone lines at 800-621-8890. It's time for Eastern Standard with a discussion of Kentucky Wired right after the latest news from NPR. From the studios of WEKU on the campus of Eastern Kentucky University, this is Eastern Standard. I'm John Hingsbergen. In today's world, it's almost impossible to imagine living without internet, or heaven forbid, worse yet, would be living with slow internet service. While that may be just an inconvenience for some, there are towns and counties in Kentucky where high-speed connections are sparse or non-existent. A few years ago, the Democratic Governor Steve Beshear and Representative Hal Rogers, a Republican, very powerful representative from Kentucky, came together with the idea of helping our state advance technologically to compete in the growing market. As I understand it, it was part of the SOAR project, the Shaping Our Appalachian Region project. From that, Kentucky Wired emerged and has been moving to connect all the state with high-speed broadband internet. And with us to discuss the impact of Kentucky Wired are a number of guests. We have a studio full of guests as well as one on the line. Let me begin with on the phone line, Philip Brown, Executive Director of the Kentucky Communications Network Authority. Philip, as I understand, your agency is the one that reports to the governor under the executive cabinet of the state?
That is correct.
And tell me, what is the Kentucky Network Communications Network Authority? What is the purpose of your authority?
Sure, John. So the purpose of the authority, which was established first by an executive order when the project was launched, is to oversee the public sector's responsibility, the state of Kentucky's responsibility in this public-private partnership to establish the network. So what we do mostly is number one, communicate about the project with Kentucky communities and citizens and legislators, as well as work directly with our stakeholders, including the private sector contractors that were brought in to actually construct and build the network.
So Kentucky Wired is a project of your agency.
That's exactly right.
Let's pick up with exactly that project, and we turn to sorry, I've got a lot of paper in front of me. We have Randy Lutke, Director of Communications for Kentucky Wired. And Randy, why don't you fill me in on the role of Kentucky Wired in this picture of trying to get broadband in the Commonwealth.
Okay. Well, thank you, John. Happy to be here today. Kentucky Wired is over 3,000 miles of ultra-high-speed, high-capacity internet. It's fiber optic cable, which serves more purposes than just internet, but it's going into every county. It's kind of like a major highway system with exit ramps into all 120 counties in the Commonwealth. And our primary purpose is to connect government offices and institutions, connect universities, libraries, community colleges, and also in all these counties we'll have a little connection point called a node to which the private companies can connect. We're kind of we call it the middle mile. We're like the backbone middle mile service, the last mile being the people, the private internet service providers that will connect from us to a home or a business or a hospital or something. And the other end of the middle mile is the connection to the global internet.
When we talk about this center hub or this central distribution network, How does that compare to other states and other areas of the country? Would Kentucky, is Kentucky unique in this kind of implementation of a system that's being put together essentially by the state?
Well, we are first in the nation to have this open access for cable into every county. And Philip, why don't you handle that one?
Sure. There are a few examples across the country of states that have built networks like this that are designed to serve the needs of their government agencies or their K-12 and post-secondary education systems. What is unique about Kentucky's effort is that, and let me back up, there are also some networks in some parts of the country or in regions that are providing that open access middle mile capacity for the private sector. Kentucky Wired is the first project in the country to combine both those functions. And the value of doing that, of course, the state decided that it wanted to provide broadband service to its own agencies and just, you know, provide that product to itself. The wholesaling will spur last-mile broadband deployment and, in fact, has already done some of that in some parts of the state where the work is taking place. It also is designed to ensure that there's an economic development opportunity in every county. So rather than just providing services in places where there are state government agencies, the project was designed to touch every single county in the state and ensure that every citizen has an opportunity to benefit from the expenditure of these taxpayer dollars.
Okay, we're going to get into more detail as we move along in the program, but let me quickly identify our other guests in the studio. First, Sandy Curd is Promise Zone Coordinator for the Kentucky Highlands Investment Corporation, a nonprofit organization?
Absolutely, a nonprofit economic development organization established during Lyndon B. Johnson's War on Poverty.
And Promise Zones are a relatively new creation. Didn't they come about during the Obama administration?
They did indeed in 2014. And I will happily report and brag that Kentucky became America's very first rural Promise Zone in the first round of those Promise Zones. Nationwide, we're up to 22 with four rural, four Indian tribal, and the remainder's urban.
And your group, your Promise Zone,
yes,
the Kentucky Highlands Investment Corporation, are concerned about broadband? Where does that fit in the picture?
Absolutely. It's all about economic diversification in our market. Our Promise Zone is one of the largest ones in the country. We represent eight counties in southeast Kentucky: Belle Clay, Harlan Knox, Leslie, Letcher, Perry, and most of Whitley County. We see the accessibility of high-speed internet, especially in what they call the uptake values, not the downloads, okay, but the ability to work at home and uptake as being a critical factor, a critical need in our desire to diversify our economy and get more people able to do work while living in our community and still making, salaries comparable with the rest of the world.
So when you say uptake, and I don't want to get too deeply into this right now, but we're talking about a reverse of the normal situation. At my home, I want quick downloads.
Exactly.
I want to watch movies. I want to get TV shows. But you're talking about having the ability to send upstream
absolutely
somewhere else
to modify data, to make impact to it, and then to push it back in, back out to the world.
A two-way superhighway rather
yes
than a superhighway one direction and a country road the other direction.
Absolutely, right. Yes.
All right, let me also get in here Larry Combs, Manager of Broadband Implementation for the Center for Rural Development. Who is the Center for Rural Development, Larry, and what's your interest in all of this?
Well, the Center for Rural Development, again, is a nonprofit organization. We were established by some local civic leaders along with a lot of input from Congressman Rogers. And our job basically is to try to improve the lives of rural communities. We have a focus area of 54 counties in southern and eastern Kentucky. And our programs are very wide-ranging. We're heavily involved in education for law enforcement and homeland security needs. And it extends into arts and culture and also into this realm of technology. We began that run with video conferencing back when very few people in the Commonwealth of Kentucky even had it. We do a lot of support services for our community college system as well, So trying to get educational opportunities out to folks.
This is Eastern Standard. Kentucky Wired is the topic of our show today. And we're going to invite our listeners to be part of the show. Some have already emailed us, wekueasternstandard@gmail.com. You can send a tweet at wekuest. And I would recommend sending a direct message at wekuest so that it'll pop right up here on my device and I'll know that it's there. I apologize for times when we've had the listeners send us a tweet and then an hour or two after the show we find that there's a message that we didn't get to. So please try to get that message to us as directly as possible. And we'll open the phone lines in a few minutes as well. But let me do this. One of the reasons we're doing this show is we had heard that there has been some concern about Kentucky Wired and actually went back and found that earlier this year, actually this summer, in July, we had a story from Kentucky Public Radio reporter Ryland Barton. Lawmakers are expressing anger over the delayed launch and uncertain cost of Kentucky Wired, a program that is supposed to bring high-speed internet to every county in the state. And we're going to repeat for you, those who didn't get to hear that story before, Capitol reporter Ryland Barton says the initiative has been hampered by difficulties in setting up telephone pole agreements.
Philip Brown is the executive director of the Kentucky Communications Network Authority, the agency that oversees the project. He says Kentucky Wired's schedule is suffering because the agency hasn't been able to make agreements with owners of telephone poles where the fiber optic wire needs to hang.
Either we can finalize the agreement that gives us access to the poles we need to build into a location or a city, or we're going to have to take the unfortunate step of redesigning the network so that we don't need those poles anymore. And what that means is that we wouldn't be building into those locations.
Kentucky Wired is a public-private partnership, and the state has to pay investors availability payments ranging from $23 million this year to $57 million in 2045. During a committee hearing on Thursday, many lawmakers suggested that the project should be scaled back or eliminated altogether. I'm Ryland Barton in Frankfort.
Philip Brown, referenced in that story, is on the line with us this morning. And, Philip, somewhere along the way in my research for the show, I heard that Kentucky Wired and this statewide implementation was going to occur, was it in 2016? Are we behind on getting this implemented? What is happening in terms of the status and, as I understand, issues for poles and the ability to run cables and so forth have been a problem for you. Fill us in on where we fit on the timeline of the original plan.
Sure. Well, let's start first with just some basic details about the network. 85% of, as Randy mentioned, it's roughly 3,200 miles of network. 85% of that is going to be an aerial construction, which means we're hanging our fiber optic cable on telephone poles that are already there. And so this issue of the pole attachment agreements, the permission from the entity that owns those poles, because we won't own any poles throughout this project. We'll just be on someone else's. So the permission to attach to those is an important agreement that we have to have. And then you actually have to, of course, to go out there and assess each pole and hang your fiber. That's a time-consuming process.
And who owns those poles? Electric utilities, cable companies, telephone companies?
Telephone companies and electric companies for the most part. AT&T and Windstream, Kentucky Utilities, AEP Power, LG&E in Louisville, and then lots of smaller companies across the state. Our contractors have designed a route that tries to get into the public right away as much as possible, but is following the path of these poles in what is the route that gets us to the most state government sites.
All right, Philip, we're going to take a short break. Let me come back to you. I'm sorry I got you onto a complex, detailed issue, and we're going to come back to
that.
In just a quick moment. This is Eastern Standard on the WEKU stations, WEKU Eastern Standard at gmail.com, at WEKUEST. Go ahead and call in if you have a question, comment about the Kentucky Wired and the statewide broadband network. 800-621-8890, 800-621-8890. It's Eastern Standard on the WEKU stations. I'm John Hingsburg, and this week we are talking Kentucky Wired, and we have folks who are filling us in on the background and the process and the current progress of Kentucky Wired. With us, we have Philip Brown, Executive Director of the Kentucky Communications Network Authority, Randy Lutke, Director of Communications for the Kentucky Wired Project, Sandy Curd, Promise Zone Coordinator for Kentucky Highlands Investment Corporation, and Larry Combs, Manager of Broadband Implementation for the Center for Rural Development. And Philip Brown, I'm sorry, we interrupted you asking about this issue of access to poles and the delays that has caused. I mean, we're talking about utilities and cable and other telecom providers are, to a great extent, are these competitors? And is that one of the reasons you're having issues with access?
No, we would not classify them as competitors at all, because our network is not going to be competing for residential broadband service customers, businesses. The only entities that are going to receive last-mile service from Kentucky Wired are the state's own agencies.
So you're not going to be around selling cable service at door-to-door?
Absolutely not. And you'd asked about schedule. The very first ring in the original project schedule, which is a ring that connected Louisville to Lexington and to Cincinnati, that was scheduled to be completed early in 2016. The final project's original completion date was to take place in 2018. So, yes, we are behind schedule, but the entire project is still in advance of its originally scheduled completion date. What does that mean for the lifetime schedule and what we think will be completion? We will be behind. And I think that we're going to be behind because of that variable of the poles. The process of making sure a pole is ready to have another line attached to it is an individualized process. You have to figure out how tall it is, how old it is, what it's made out of, what other companies have already attached to it. And from there, you decide where your fiber should go and whether or not you need to replace the pole. And like it is really a pole-by-pole activity, and so it's time-consuming. And I think that the original schedule simply did not take into account the reality of how time-consuming that process can be.
So what is the final completion estimate at this point?
You know, I think given the experience of the project so far and knowing that variable is out there, I've been a little bit reluctant to talk about, with any sort of definitive prediction, a completion date. I will say that we're very hopeful we're going to turn on the first ring next year, and with rings to follow in an orderly process after that. But you know, we're working to make up time where we can with our contractors, and part of that involves having a conversation with these companies that own the poles and with the companies that are attaching on those poles to encourage them to move as fast as they can. We're relying in large part on those other folks on the pole to do what they have to do in order to make room for us. You know, there's a process. This is a common process, and it's actually a common problem with telecommunications projects across the country. It's called make-ready construction, and it typically is cumbersome. And so, you know, we're not experiencing anything that is outside the norm. I think we are learning firsthand that this process can take a lot longer than you like.
I've mentioned there's some concerns that have been raised, and I want to mention that we did reach out. I'm not sure if we've reached out to every one of these folks, but Senator Chris McDaniel, Republican from Taylor Mill and chair of the Senate Appropriations Committee, said the whole scheme had been improperly arranged. McDaniel had said earlier this year the same creativity, in my humble opinion, could border on not just civil but possible criminal prosecution affiliated with the sale of these bonds. He's talking about, I guess, sale of bonds that needed to build this system. McDaniel said, I want a shutdown plan with financial costs to shut it down. Stop work. What's it going to cost us to get out of this? So can someone explain to me what that is all about? What is the issue with bonds and the concern by legislators?
Well, the majority of the funding for this was in public-private bonds that were sold, $307 million worth. There was $23.5 million from federal grants, $30 million from the general fund. But the bonds have already been sold, and that's one of the things that we keep seeing in the media is people calling for this to stop, and it's only been a few. But those that do don't understand that it would actually cost more to stop it than it would to complete it, because these bonds have already been sold, and you can't just say, well, we're not going to honor those bonds. I mean, who would want to do business with the state again if that kind of thing was to happen? And then there might probably follow legal problems with contractors.
And there are,
so it would cost far more to stop it than it would to continue it, and you wouldn't have anything to show for it. In the end, you would have spent all that for nothing.
There are components of the system in place, but not a functioning system at this point.
Well, there have been some miles have been laid. 15 miles of aerial fiber, 39 miles of strand, which is the the wire to which the cable is strapped between the poles.
It's fiber optic?
Fiber. Okay. It's like a thick wire that they strap to the cable to help hold it in place.
Ah, okay.
I was just told yesterday that we have fiber going into 80 different sites. And when they say a site, they mean like a building, that the fiber's already in place in those buildings. There's 68 miles of conduit that's been buried. The cable will be run through.
And
actually, if I could interject.
Sure, Phil.
Those statistics don't reflect the work that's being done by the system's third-party partners. We have agreements with Cincinnati Bell to do much of the construction for the project in northern Kentucky. We have a similar arrangement with the EKN system of companies, that's Appalachian Wireless and several smaller telephone companies in eastern Kentucky that are constructing a lot of the what we call laterals. And then a third similar arrangement with the BGN, Bluegrass Network companies, that are to the west of Frankfurt. And when you add in the progress that those companies have made, the mileage is considerably higher. I don't have an exact statistic, but for instance, I know that at least one of those partners says they're about two-thirds of the way done, which would equate to about 200 miles worth of fiber that's already been hung. And so, you know, the progress is a little bit farther along than I think has been conveyed in the past. Those partnerships also serve the benefit of actually saving the project money. And those are situations where we found companies that were already in place in the area, had assets and infrastructure and staff, and they were able to construct for us in the project at a cost cheaper than our greenfield construction. So by entering into those projects or those partnerships, it made financial sense for the Commonwealth. It also allowed us to partner with the private sector, which I hope would allay a lot of the fear that was present in the provider community at the project's beginning, that we were there to compete with them, which nothing could be further from the truth, and the proof is there with, you know, our partnering with companies where it made sense.
When we talk about partnering with these companies, I think the average person is likely to ask, okay, so will it mean my cable bill will be less? I'll pay less for internet? Is it going to make it more efficient and have a benefit directly to consumers?
I don't know that our project is going to directly impact prices seen by residents and businesses because, again, our network is not there to provide that last-mile service. I do think that in the long run, as our middle-mile network is used by more and more private providers to carry their traffic out to the internet, our pricing is going to influence the market, and so as prices come down for that critical component of the product, you know, it's one of the inputs that goes into the overall cost. I think it could have some impact on last mile pricing, not directly through us and not immediately, and I couldn't put any sort of estimate on exactly how far that extent would be, but it's certainly possible that at the end of the day, you would see some positive impact for consumers.
I want to get back to Larry Combs and to Sandy Kerr to talk about the Center for Rural Development and Kentucky Highlands Investment. But one other question is, are there services now being provided, connections that are already in place, that are going to be replaced by the Kentucky Wired Project? Or are there things, is this all enhancement? This is new stuff that we've not had yet. Philip or Randy, yeah.
Well, no, I guess the only thing that might be replaced is in the government offices.
There are connections among government offices
right? Kentucky currently pays quite a bit of money for internet service. But now, after this is complete, we will be owning that cable instead of leasing it from somebody else.
I know there's a public safety network in place that distributes information statewide.
I think I'll let the executive director take it from there.
Sure. So, you know, I think you're referring to the FirstNet project, which was started by the federal government in 2008, and it was designed to actually satisfy one of the recommendations of the 9/11 Commission. Solve that problem of interoperability and the ability of first responders to communicate with each other in the event of an emergency. So there's a national wireless interoperable system that's going to be constructed through FirstNet. And Kentucky will be a part of that. We've opted into the FirstNet system. AT&T is constructing for the national government that, you know, that connecting existing infrastructure and building new infrastructure where it's needed to make that network a reality. We do envision, although it's a little early for us to have worked out details, but we do envision some sort of synergy between the FirstNet network and Kentucky Wire's network as well.
Let me get Larry and Sandy in the conversation here again. Why are your organizations, enthusiastic about what this is going to provide? What's it going to bring to these communities, especially the rural communities of Kentucky, that they do not have?
Well, you know, what we're looking at the Center for Rural Development is this whole issue of the digital divide, the haves and the have-nots. And it seems to be a rural-urban issue, especially with eastern and central Kentucky. The urban areas that we've got, the population centers, our providers have gone in there and done, for the most part, a really good job of providing access. But once you get 2 or 3 miles out of town, that drops off tremendously to either no access or very limited access through wireless through your cell phone. And for our communities out there trying to strive for other economic goals, you know, besides coal mining and manual labor, access to the internet is that vital business service that you have to have. I mean, it's like setting up a business and not having access to the post office.
Right. Right. And for us in the Promise Zone, and I mean, it's not a secret to Kentucky. I mean, we've all been suffering from an economic decline and changes in the energy industry for the last several years. And part of what we've wanted to do is to see the diversification of our economy. Now, our people love where they live. They've got family where they live. They want to stay close to families. And this idea of working remotely is a huge factor for them to be able to work for a international or national company. We have one of our Promise Zone partners, EKCEP, that's Eastern Kentucky Concentrated Employment. They developed a system, a subsidiary called Teleworks USA. And we have watched them put these hubs in southeastern Kentucky where they are training individuals, giving them an opportunity after a few weeks to graduate with, say, like 4 different certifications that they know digital remote employers are looking for. They have a Rolodex of over 70 companies, and we have seen in just a very short period of time, say like 18 months, that we have at least 1,000 employees now working from home in southeast Kentucky. And I can't remember the last time we cut a ribbon on a manufacturer with 1,000 jobs.
How are they doing it now if they don't have this network in place?
Right now they're doing it because they are able to find employment with folks like U-Haul, Xbox, Apple, and so forth, because they can get on the coax cable that's available, they can get an uptake of 3. Okay, to be able to move past that and get an uptake beyond that, you're going to have to switch modalities. You're going to have to switch over into the fiber, which then launches into a much greater thing. So what we want to do is to be able to launch into the 5 uptakes, the 10 uptakes. That opens us up to places like Amazon. That opens us up to advanced working with Apple and other companies like that to be able to move up those corporate ladders into those jobs. And Larry wants to add on that.
Yeah, to expand on that just a bit, we've got several counties in our area that have got fiber to the home, to every home. Probably our shining example is People's Rural Telephone in Jackson County. They provide gigabit-level services up and down.
Yes.
To those residents. And I know for a fact that they've gotten well over 300 people now working from their homes. Now, if you take that and move that over to what's being done in Perry County with EKCEP directly, they've actually had to set up a telework center because anybody that lives outside of downtown Hazard does not have access sufficient to maintain employment.
Exactly.
We have a radio transmitter on the mountain in Hazard.
Well, maybe it gives us a hot spot up there and we can park.
We have issues. I mentioned that because with our transmitters in Hazard, Corbin, Pineville, Lawrenceburg, we don't always have the most reliable internet service there.
There you go.
We get the complaints from listeners when one of those stations drops out because we're feeding it through a broadband network.
And, you know, I can't give you names, but, you know, there's a lot of anecdotal information out there, a lot of discussion on Facebook and other media where people have gone through this training, they have received the job offer, they've gone home, and at some point along the line, their service received an audit from the company, and they were forced to move out of that particular area of employment.
Right.
And it's a shame. You know,
we have had, at KCNA, we have had cell phone companies, cellular companies, tell us outright that they will build more towers when this network's complete. And I just know that we can't promise what's going to be done because we're not actually doing it. But they tell us that they will improve that.
Well, I have an email, for instance. This is from Jeff, who writes in, and the focus of his question is there any indication that ISPs have started or will start tapping into the Kentucky Wired infrastructure to provide service to new rural customers? If not, are there plans to provide incentives to ISPs? Of course, internet service providers, you're talking about mobile telephone, cell phone providers.
Right.
I assume all of it's one business nowadays. They all kind of merge at this point.
Yeah, we can't promise that that's going to happen. And like we've said numerous times, we're not actually bringing the internet directly to their home. But I think it's logical that, it previously was economically not feasible for them to go to these rural areas. I have a thing, the FCC did a survey back in 2014 or something in Harlan County.
Yeah.
Sandy's area there. And the cable company there, FCC, was asking questions about broadband. And they said they paid, this one provider said they paid $18,000 for 300 megs of bandwidth.
That sounds like
pretty slow speed. And people near them, Barberville, Cumberland, they were paying $8,000 for a gig. So they were paying a lot more money for a lot less service.
Exactly.
And it just makes sense that once we're there, that these companies will want to connect.
We need to take another break in just a moment. We want to get listeners involved in the conversation. But this is, I'm sure, a complex question, but it's a very simple yes or no answer. Is it possible that we may be building a system that's going to get replaced by a new technology? What about wireless technology, satellites? Some folks in the rural areas, you know, companies market the internet service by satellite. Is there some other technology that may make this broadband system obsolete?
They expect this technology to be around. What we're going to do will be 30 years and beyond.
Ever use your satellite radio driving through our mountains, you know that satellite is not a reliable service.
Kentucky Wired is our topic on this week's Eastern Standard. WEKUEasternstandard@gmail.com is our email. Send a tweet at WEKUEST or give us a call, 800-621-8890. We'd love to get some listeners on the air in the final segment of today's show, 800-621-8890. This is Eastern Standard on the WEKU station's Kentucky Wired, project that is sometimes controversial but is promising to provide broadband coverage for the entire Commonwealth of Kentucky.
Absolutely, going into every county.
Now, how does it affect Jefferson County, Fayette County, and places that are already pretty well wired and pretty well have service in place?
Well, I think it's going to be – it may not benefit an individual in his home. They may already have high-speed internet. They have more access to that than someone in the rural counties. But it's going to be a big help for businesses.
I think I can speak to that a little bit. A lot of businesses in our Commonwealth are becoming very data-centric. We've got some pretty significant engineering firms. You look at General Electric Aircraft Engines up in northern Kentucky and some of the firms we've got in Lexington and Louisville.
And, don't forget what's happening in Moorhead with the
aerospace industry. Exactly. So a lot of those companies with their satellite offices need a direct fiber connection from one to the other. To get those services through our telcos is an extreme expensive undertaking if the fiber is even available to have. And so, you know, we're just putting more fiber out there, and that just increases the opportunities for those companies to have private wide area network services throughout the Commonwealth.
And don't forget redundancy.
I want to get on that answer, too.
Sure, Philip.
And Sandy also. Lexington, cities like Louisville and Lexington have actually asked us to bring fiber to them as we're building through their cities. Louisville had actually a fairly public conversation earlier in the year about their addition to the network. And so in those cases, what the cities are doing, and they're not the only cities in the Commonwealth that have done this, rather than us running 288 fibers through the city, which is what we need for our project, we're bringing more fiber in, and the cities will own that extra fiber. And, you know, Louisville is a good example. They're using that for their own needs. They're going to impact traffic control and traffic safety, public safety. And so, you know, cities have a need for inside the government fiber content transmission. And so the cities are taking the advantage of the fact that we'll be there, and the cost will never be cheaper for them to have their own fiber, and they're gonna improve their own services at a very reasonable rate. One thing I wanted to touch on real quick before the break, our network will be viable at least for 30 years, because no matter the last mile platform, whether it's a copper wire or DSL or cable or even satellite and wireless, all of those technologies providing broadband to our homes and our businesses need some sort of middle mile network, and fiber is really the only platform that has the capacity to carry all the content out to the internet. So while there might be new innovations in providing broadband to homes and businesses, that last mile service, those platforms are still going to need a middle mile network, and fiber is the way to go.
All right, yeah. Sandy.
And I just simply wanted to add in there, in places where there is existing internet and good fiber coverage, is the idea that in our data-driven economy, organizations and businesses that deal with that, they can no longer afford to ever go down, which means they need to have backup plan A, backup plan B, backup plan C. Mm-hmm. Kentucky Wired in so many areas becomes immediately the backup plan A or B for them. So that they are never down.
We are building in redundancies for the system. And, you know, one interesting statistic, and this comes from a national nonprofit that does broadband advocacy and research, Connected Nation. They've done a nationally representative survey that indicates that 80% of businesses in America use broadband every single day. And 39% of those businesses that are using broadband every day say that they would like or need a faster speed, but they can't get it. Mm-hmm. And that, to me, that is a very compelling statistic about the ever-growing demand. With 5G wireless just around the corner, which is going to make all of our phones work faster and better and do great things, there's going to be an increased need for that middle-mile pipe to carry all that extra content. As more and more people consume your radio show online, or they watch their favorite TV show online, the demand's only going to go up, and that's one of the reasons our network is designed with such a large amount of fibers, is to ensure that our needs for today and next year and 5 years and 30 years from now are going to be taken care of.
All right. Well, I want to get listeners involved in this conversation. I know we have at least one caller waiting on the line at 800-621-8890. And Jim, hang in there for just a second, because we've had these emails waiting for a while. I want to refer to Kevin's email. Kevin from Prestonsburg, does the Kentucky Communications Network Authority, KCNA, plan to ask the General Assembly for more money to cover the millions of dollars of fees that have piled up as a result of supervening events? I read that over the life of the contract, the state will pay close to $1 billion to pay down the bonds. Considering Kentucky's massive unfunded pension liability, does it make sense to move forward with this project?
Well, I think it's important to, when people start talking about these numbers, they forget that this project will pay for itself through the money that it saves by owning the network instead of leasing it. And in this cable, all these fibers, half of those fibers are called dark fiber. They will be leased to other companies. And that will be another source of revenue that will help this project break even.
Another question came from Alan, and it's a bit repetitive. He said the project was originally slated for completion last April. Reports indicated it could now slip into 2020 or beyond. Will the technology be obsolete before the network goes online? I think you've answered that question. Mm-hmm. But Alan says tech companies like Google are moving away from wireline technology in favor of fixed wireless. Was it smart for Kentucky to enter into a 30-year commitment for a technology that could soon be outdated? Is that true? I mean, fixed wireless, is that something
well,
that's
I think the piece that's missing in that conversation is that fixed wireless still has to go down to fiber to get anywhere. You can put a tower out there, but as you well know, you've got to have some kind of service going to the tower in order to get from the wireless back to the Internet proper.
I mean, I think of the microwave networks we used to use to distribute signals from one place to the other. Phone companies, yeah. Of course, the
but
phone companies have taken all
goes,
that down. Right?
Goes to a wire somewhere. People, you know, so many things appear to be wireless. They think everything's wireless, but everything, whether it's your cell phone, your router on your computer, everything eventually connects to a wire.
And fiber right now is the leading technology for transporting large amounts of data. In the laboratories, they've actually gotten to the point where they can now start talking in terabytes as opposed to gigabytes. Wireless is great. It's good. It is a perfect solution for some final mile uses. But if you're looking to transmit 10 gigabits, 100 gigabit, terabytes of data, it just simply cannot function at that level.
Let's go to the phone and talk to Jim from Berea. As we mentioned, that we do have a line open if you'd like to get on board at 800-621-8888. Hey, Jim, thank you for calling. What's your question or your point?
Well, I was traveling through McKee, Kentucky, yesterday, and I stumbled upon something at a small library in McKee, and it was a grand opening for a room where veterans could come in and be a broadband connection, be able to be connected with a physician to instead of having to draw hundreds of miles, say, to VA Center in Lexington or wherever. And I started asking a lot of questions, and it turns out that this wonderful little facility in this, based in this library, was provided by, I believe it was a partner with SCRTC, and they have a unit based in the McKee area. And I met their representatives from Hal Rogers' office, Mitch McConnell's office. So apparently this was a partnership between business and government in bringing a wonderful service to this little town in eastern Kentucky.
So is your point, Jim, that this is being provided already and that we don't need the Kentucky Wired network to provide this type of service?
It may have some underpinnings in this Kentucky Wire program, but I was just blown away that, you know, here you have a facility within a library where veterans in a remote part of Kentucky can go online with their personal doctor.
Telemedicine.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
Then no need to drive 100 miles to get to a specialist.
Well, Jim, this is Larry. I'm a former United States Marine and currently a patient of the Veterans Administration, so I know exactly the benefits that go on here. And I was at that opening in McKee yesterday, and I can tell you that without the foresight of People's Rural Telephone, a facility like that would never exist. There simply just would not be the bandwidth capable of doing that. And as I mentioned earlier, we've got a few counties in eastern Kentucky that have got that capability. You know, our goal at the Center for Rural Development is to, you know, leave no soldier behind. We want to be able to make sure that regardless of whether you live in McKee or Hyden or Hazard or Prestonsburg, that you've got the same ability within your community to access those services. And, you know, the way of doing that, of course, is through high-speed internet.
Well, and Jim, I just want to Sandy here, and I just want to, you know, add in to what you saw with telemedicine. It only has the ability to grow with greater access to fiber speeds. Being able for a physician in another city or town to be able to view digital conversions of X-rays or MRIs or those types of things, that's a lot of information flowing over those, and we have to have have the biggest pipeline coming out of those communities to be able to do that. But we really see, at least in the Promise Zone, is telemedicine being an excellent way to be able to reduce the cost for our citizens and being able to access quality specialized care for all of our folks, to be able to do it on a regular basis, and to actually improve the health, not only our economy, but the health of our people. And so I'm thrilled that you were able to stumble upon that in McKee.
And not just health care, education. A student in rural Kentucky could get online tutoring from somebody far away, too. Mm-hmm.
Jim, thank you for that call. We do have a line open at 800-621-8890. That's 800-621-8890. We do have a tweet. Actually, Lance sent a couple of tweets back-to-back. Lance says, I'd like to know what kind of labor positions they have within the company, and then Lance followed up, or if they just contract their labor. So are there jobs that people such as himself, and actual jobs with Kentucky Wired or with this project?
I think the executive director would have more detail about that, but there is a certain percentage of people that are supposed to be hired from within Kentucky. Philip?
That's right. As a public-private partnership, the Commonwealth essentially contracted out responsibility for building the network to the private sector partners, which is Macquarie. And Macquarie Investment brought in two construction companies called Black & Veatch and Ledcor, and they formed a partnership to manage the project, design the project, and then ultimately oversee the construction. I know that they're using subcontractors from Kentucky. There is a requirement that a certain percentage of the labor be from Kentucky and based here. And so I do think there's opportunities for subcontractors to work, but it's not directly from my office or our agency. It's through the subcontractors.
So when someone's called me about that, I've referred them to Black & Veatch or Ledcor, the contractors.
But it's so much of the telecommunications industry, cable companies, and the internet providers, they bring in contractors, people that are working elsewhere. They travel around the country setting up these systems. So there's an element of that, but there's a provision. Is that in a state provision included in the
contract
legislation that put it into place?
Okay, it was in the original contract that was let that there would be a certain percentage of local labor that was used. And I can tell you that our community college system has really gone forward with this in modifying their lineman program to include fiber cable splicing. So they're being trained to be able to implement this project once we get rolling on actual construction.
And also talking about jobs, when this whole network is complete, there are companies that are going to move to Kentucky to have because of this broadband access, and then you will have more jobs. I don't think there's any doubt that there will be more jobs.
You have to remember, John, that we're moving from like 50th, maybe 49th in the country, and this will leapfrog us all the way up into the top 25%, top 5 maybe. So that's going to be a very exciting time for Kentucky in terms of its economic impact.
Now, Randy, you said that Kentucky Wired is going to pay for itself, as opposed to so many other projects that merely take money and that give nothing back.
Yeah.
Why, then, has private industry not done this? If it's such a profitable opportunity out there, how in our free enterprise system, somebody gets an idea and they say, I can make money off of that, and they become wealthy off of it. It seems to me that governments tend to get into projects that no one else will pay for.
Well, the private industries will go into the highly populated areas and make their money there. When they get into the rural areas, it's not economically feasible for them to go in there as much. And so when they do, people in the rural areas, as Sandy, I'm sure, can attest to, pay a lot more for a lot less.
Yes. Well, and John, you've got to remember also in the private sector, they have to pay for that investment in a very rapid period of time, sometimes even as quickly as 2 years. And in areas that are not as population dense, that can be impossible. The government, on the other hand, is able to depreciate this project over, 30 years or longer, which automatically reduces its cost.
And they're also, changing that expense line item and basically zeroing it out at the end of the day by the fact that they will actually own the fiber as opposed to buying those services at whatever market rate happens to be out there.
And I'd also like to add that we're not here to beat up on AT&T, Windstream, or Spectrum, or anybody else. Those companies do what they are supposed to do. They, you know, they have a responsibility to their stockholders to make money. And so they're doing what they should do. And I think it's just been – it's shown that they won't go into some of these areas and won't provide – what we can provide.
Well, we're just about out of time with our program, but let's talk about what's coming next. What happens? I mean, will there be legislation? Will there be issues addressed on this topic during the upcoming General Assembly session? We've got a budget that needs to be worked through and a lot of money needed for the pension systems. Is there something on the horizon there?
Well, I think Philip, the executive director, Philip Brown, could probably answer that a little better.
Well, we are having an ongoing conversation with both the governor and the members of the General Assembly about the future of the project and how we move forward. And you know, my agency is working on a completion plan to respond to many of the Senate and the House's questions to us about when we'll be finished and what the impact of our what we call supervening events will be. We're working to ensure that we're not going to be a burden on a stressed general fund. The details of that are still, you know, a little bit premature to talk about it, but we do know that with long-term revenues coming to the project that are significant, there's a path forward. And on the other side of that option, of course, is Kentucky's contractual obligations. You know, this contract was signed in September of 2015, and it does bind us. So what Randy said earlier was correct. You know, terminating the project and not finishing it doesn't actually cut any losses. It actually would incur more costs.
All right. We're gonna
and costs that don't yield any benefits or yield a network. So we have to keep in mind that Kentucky just can't abandon its obligations. And wouldn't do that. So the option is move forward and have something to show for it, or go down a path that doesn't save us money and doesn't provide the network that we know.
Philip Brown is Executive Director of Kentucky Communications Network Authority. Randy Lechte, Director of Communications for Kentucky Wired. Larry Combs, Manager of Broadband Implementation for the Center for Rural Development. Sandy Curd, Promise Zone Coordinator for Kentucky Highlands Investment Corporation. Thank you all for being here. We've run out of time. We encourage you to interact with us, WEKU Eastern Standard at gmail.com, at any time, and tune in for a rebroadcast of this program Sunday evening at 6.